Okay, well, I want to thank everyone for joining us here on the Will Peaside Circle. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and it's August 18th, 2016. And Madeline and I have just arrived here in beautiful Rochester, New York, which may be competing now with Cincinnati to be the number one hotbed of vegan activism in North America, I think, after having dinner with Ted and Carol Barnett here, finding out about what they're doing. And there's a lot of great things happening in many towns and cities and communities around North America and worldwide, which is, it's good to remember that. There's a lot of progress, a lot of people doing fantastic work. And so we're glad to be able to toss a few pebbles into the pond here and make the ripples spread out in various ways. So thank you all so much for being with us here this evening. It's a delight to be able to share this time together. And I want to, of course, reiterate that we are always happy to have you join us with your, not only your presence, but if you have any questions or concerns or comments you'd like to make, press star 6. If you press star 6 on your phone, you will effectively raise your hand so that I can see if you'd like to say something, and then I can unmute your phone here. So that's the way it works. And so like we normally do, we have a little time in the beginning where we just kind of tune in for a moment together, and then we have a chance to answer questions. I'd like to say a few things. I'm planning actually on speaking, if it works, a little bit with Mark Stroud from Cincinnati, because we're going to be doing a World Peace Diet Facilitator training in Cincinnati pretty soon. It's the weekend of September 3rd and 4th, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And so we'd like to talk a little bit about that, since that'll be before the next World Peace Diet Circle that we'll be having on September 15th. So bless you all. Thanks for coming. Let's take a moment as we begin our time together, wherever you happen to be. If you're driving or whatever, don't close your eyes. But if you'd like, just maybe we can turn our attention within for a moment and feeling our connection with the Earth, this beautiful planet. I never tire of seeing the endless shades of beauty and of creativity that's being manifested here through 10 billion different things and manifestation. So we just give thanks for this connection with the earth, with other animals who are celebrating their lives, who are also imprisoned by humans and who are suffering at our hands. We feel our connection with them also and send them our love. We feel our connection with other human beings, the human family here, which is in many ways laboring under many delusions, wounds, and misunderstandings. And we feel our connection also and celebrate our connection with those of our brothers and sisters who are doing whatever they can do to help raise awareness about the consequences of mistreating animals for food and for products and for testing and for other uses. And we feel our connection with everyone who's working to help build a world of greater compassion and kindness and freedom, justice and equality and sustainability and awareness. We know that we're part of an ever-growing and expanding web of concerned human beings, and that this web is gaining in power and in brightness as it touches more and more lives. People are transforming. We're seeing evidence of this all the time. Major changes, minor changes are happening in people's behavior and their outlook and their awareness and their way of interacting and understanding, and we celebrate these positive changes as people move toward more vegan ways of living, more kindness and compassion, and a sense of commitment to caring for others, and no longer just believing the official stories in our society, but questioning them. So we give thanks for this movement, knowing that it is built on the shoulders of many men and women from our generation, from earlier generations, going back a long, long time, who've planted seeds of awareness and wisdom in scriptures and in their example and in their energy and their caring and in their lives and their meditations. So we give thanks for all that and for the, we were just talking actually at dinner about the morphogenetic field, as Rupert Sheldrake refers to it, the field of shared human consciousness, where we can plant seeds that can impact everyone in our species. And we give thanks knowing that all the ripples that radiate out into the infinite web of relations from our being together here this evening will be ripples that bring peace and healing, kindness and caring, and greater understanding into our world for a positive transformation, a positive change, not only in our lives individually, but in our collective life. And we give thanks for each other and for ourselves and for taking the responsibility that we have for being accountable in our lives here on planet Earth seriously enough to question the routine mistreatment of animals for food and other products, and to be a voice for those who have a voice in many cases. Pigs certainly have voices, and cows and chickens and turkeys, and they have a voice, but their voices are not recognized or heard. And some animal of our other friends, like fishes, don't have audible voices, and yet we can be their voices as well. So as we close this part of our call, we give thanks for another day, another option, another opportunity, really is a better word, I guess, opportunity for expanding our awareness and understanding and connecting with each other and cooperating together and building together a world that cares for all living beings, to work in building this world through not only the physical bricks, perhaps, of things we're working on the physical level, but also on the more metaphysical bricks of ideas, of inspirations, of awakenings, of concepts and ideas and feelings that bring liberation and empowerment to us and to those who we're in communication with. That we're building communities of peace and freedom and justice. And we give thanks for this precious human life that we have, this opportunity to be part of this movement of awakening on planet Earth, where we are, apparently, during this time. So thank you all again for joining us. It's fabulous to be able to share this way. And we have had, since the last time we talked, which was the third Thursday in July, we've had quite a lot of excellent opportunities in our ministry here. We've been, right after that, we headed off to, well, it was actually in Switzerland, but we headed off and did a whole lecture tour to Manchester, Connecticut, which is basically West Hartford. And then also we did a half-day World Peace Diet training in Fitchburg, Massachusetts, which is just outside of Boston. And then also a concert and in Worcester, and then a lecture in Worcester. And we were on Marlene Narrow, who is one of our World Peace Diet facilitators, on her radio program for two consecutive Fridays. She has her program at noon every Friday, Vegan Nation. And that was just fantastic. We really love working together with Marlene. And she's just always bringing creative ideas to ways we can broach the vegan way of living in our society. And we had her on actually last in July, talking about that in our last call. And then, Evelyn came back from Switzerland. We had lectures in Provincetown. We'd also had, just before that, we'd had a lecture at Dorothy Torrey, who's now a Ropisai facilitator in training on Cape Cod, and who has a great network of people in Cape Cod. We did, we had just done a screening of Cowspiracy. We had 180 people show up, which is quite a thing on Cape Cod. And most of them were not, we were pre-vegans, getting a good dose of that message on Cowspiracy. And then we had a Q&A afterwards, which was great. And then we had an intuition workshop at her house, and she's bringing in people in Cape Cod. She's going to be bringing Brian Clement and some other well-known plant-based and vegan educators. So welcome, Dorothy. It's great to have you with us. And so we were also able to do some things in Cape Cod, some more things in Hyannis. And then we headed off the Cape to East Hampton, which is basically Western Massachusetts, and gave a lecture through the Dharma Voices for Animals, which I just want to mention that, everybody. If you have any interest in Buddhism, there's Dharma Voices for Animals, DVA.org, DharmaVoicesForAnimals.org, and that is an organization that has chapters, and there are chapters all over the United States and actually worldwide. It's pretty much started by our friend Bob Isaacson, who had a nice talk with him on the phone today, and they're really working hard to make this an international movement, and he's heading off to Korea. We've been working together with them somewhat in Korea, Taiwan, Singapore, Malaysia, as well as in the United States. And so we gave a lecture there in East Hampton promoting veganism, but it was sponsored by these Buddhist groups. And but it was open to the general public, and it went really well. It was a great turnout, nice big crowd came. And so I just love that, actually, because I think that the truth is an old truth. I think that any social justice movement, and I think veganism is a social justice movement, really. It's a transformation movement. It's probably the most basic social justice movement there is. It's the primary one. Needs to have the support on some level of religion or inner spiritual groups, and so we've been lacking that quite a bit in a lot of ways, in the vegan movement and the animal liberation movement. A lot of churches and Buddhist groups and Taoist groups and other religious groups have done something, but a lot of them haven't really done much, and in many ways, as I talk about the World Peace Diet, tend to turn away from and look the other way. It's nice to see yoga groups and different groups and some Unitarian groups. The lecture we did in West Hartford was at a Unitarian church, and there was an exception. They had a lot of people from the Unitarian church actually show up. So somebody there knew what they were doing. Sophie, her name is, and she's in the winter she's in Florida, and she also got a picture out there in her Unitarian church outside Ocala. So it's great to see these groups like Unitarians and other progressives beginning to bring this message. And again, with the Buddhist groups, it's been kind of a hard, difficult thing. We can talk about that a little bit later, why that's so. But it was a great event, actually, all in all. And then we headed to Albany, New York, and also had a couple of events there, and then we were just recently, the last couple of days, in Ithaca, New York, at the Green Star Co-op, which is a place where some of you may relate to this. There's a lot of interest in free-range, grass-fed backyard meat and dairy. That seems to be very popular here. A lot of progressive, conscious people who think that the way to go is with free-range, grass-fed kind of thing, and so it was great that we got a good turnout there. We had about 60 people at the co-op, which was quite a good turnout, I think, for there. And then yesterday we were speaking in Watkins Glen, the Farm Sanctuary is a pretty famous place, and all their interns showed up for both events. And they're a great bunch of people, mainly younger women, who are working hard to help animals at Farm Sanctuary and also to help bring the reality of animals and the suffering of animals and the personalities and unique individualities of the animals to anyone who visits. And there's quite a few people visiting animal sanctuaries who are not vegan. Class groups come, and kids with their parents come, and so many people do go vegan. It's one of the best ways to help people go vegan, besides the kind of work we're doing, which is education and the ideas, but also when people can just see pigs and cows and chickens and interact with them, and you know the old thing, rub a pig's belly and you'll never have bacon again. So that seems to be working very well. And they were all there. And so now we're just, we've been on the road now for about a week since we left Cape Cod, and this is the 60 days. We have exactly 60 days, basically, from August 11th to October 11th, when we'll be back home in October 11th at conclusion of our 11-month lecture tour in our RV, and we're doing 66 events in these last 60 days. So this is sort of the final big push with a lot of events, and pretty much every single night, and some days we have two or three. So, but really happy to be able to work with so many fabulous people. And it's also great to see Plant Pure Nation creating the Plant Pure Summit. I think you're all maybe aware of that by now. If you're not, you can check it out, Plant Pure Summit. I just was interviewed for that. That's actually going to be in September. It's video interviews with quite a few people. I think just close to 35 or 40 vegan experts. We did the largest online vegan event in history when we did Vegan Palooza in 2012 and 2013, and no one has ever done a vegan event as large as that before or since. However, this Plant Pure Nation, I would say, could qualify as a vegan event, online vegan event, and it will be bigger, I think. They're up to 10,000 people already, and it's still quite a ways to go. So I'm glad. I mean, it's great. They've got a great foundation, a big platform of Plant Pure Nation pods around the United States. We're going to be speaking through some of the people in Plant Pure pods and some of our talks, like in Worcester, Ohio, for example. The movie I highly recommend, Plant Pure Nation. Plant Pure movement is great. We know the people. It's basically Nelson Campbell, who's T. Colin Campbell's one of the, I guess, three or four sons. And really do a great job, I think, of bringing not just the health benefits of vegan living, or as they call it, plant-based living or plant-pure living, but also they're very open to the ethical dimensions and the environmental dimensions. And so that's why they're including me, for example, as one of the experts. It's mostly people like Michael Greger, MD, and Neil Barnard, MD, and T. Colin Campbell, and Neil Barnard, and there are quite a few other well-known MDs talking about the benefits of plant-based eating, some dietitians, some chefs, and a few people like myself, maybe, but it's mostly the health aspect, but they are open to the other aspect. So we had a great interview, and I'm looking forward to when that all goes up, which will be next month, around the 10th to the 20th or something like 10th to the 17th, I think, something like that. And that's going to reach a lot of people. So there are many avenues that the vegan message is reaching a lot of new people. And I'd love to hear, of course, any ideas or insights that any of you have about how we can increase our reach or how we can be more effective advocates. One of the main things I think we can do, really, is to work on our own capacities to live what veganism actually is ourselves. And this is really one of the primary foundations for an effective movement. As Gandhi said, to have our own personal transformation of veganism that goes deeply into our bones and cells so that we are congruent in our message, so that when we're talking about veganism, perhaps with people, or writing about it, or whatever it is we're doing, we're living it in our relationships with our loved ones and with other people and at work and whatever. And I think that can be the most difficult in, part of this whole thing, because it's not that difficult in some ways to be loving and kind to the other animals, like cows and pigs and chickens, who are not criticizing us or blaming us or doing anything that pushes our buttons. But how do we respond when we are in our relationship with other people? And that's, I think, what we really can also develop, the vegan ideals and principles in our lives in a way to become much more effective as advocates. So thank you again for joining us, everyone. I'm going to go look here now and see if we have Mark Stroud with us. Let me see here. Yep. Oh, Anna's here. Okay, I'm unmuting Anna. Ta-da. Let's see. Oops, sorry about that. I made a mistake. Okay, here we go. So, hello. Are you there?
Hello, Will. Hello. Anna and I are here together.
Oh, I see. Oh, great. So you're both on the same number. Good. I'm glad that's working. Great. All right. So for everyone who's on the call, some of you I know are new. So we now have on the call with us Mark Stroud and Anna Ferguson, who live in Cincinnati. And Mark and Anna have been intimately involved with the World Peace Diet since almost the beginning, in a sense. Shortly after World Peace Diet was released, maybe just a year or so afterwards, Mark and I had started having a lot of phone calls about bringing the World Peace Diet message to the world. And so we've been kind of collaborating on things, and Anna has started the World Peace Yoga in Cincinnati, and Mark is a former restaurateur, I guess not even former, I mean current restaurateur, and chef, a long time vegan, over 40 years, and so they had the first, I think, of all the World Peace Diet facilitator classes and held them regularly for quite a few years, and really we've built up the vegan community in Cincinnati in a beautiful way. We had the World Peace Jubilees there for 5 years in a row, where we had amazing gatherings that would in October of every year with almost everyone you can think of who's well known in the vegan movement was there at one point giving a talk. So we have an event coming up in September. And Mark, Anna, would you like to talk a little bit about that? Great.
Well, we're... Sure. Go ahead, Anna.
No, it's all right.
Well, we're just really delighted and honored to be hosting the World Peace Diet Facilitator Training here in Cincinnati. And really looking forward to you welcoming and... we've got people signed up now from really all over the country, including, of course, a core group of people that are looking forward to it here in Cincinnati. It's going to be a Friday evening, all day Saturday, and all day Sunday. And so it's a great opportunity to spend some one-on-one, rub your elbows together with Will and Madeline. And one of the really cool things about this weekend is that we've just really gone upwards to make sure that it's available to everyone, financially in particular. So the accommodations are included, food is included, of course, the training itself, and for the weekend. So if you are thinking about it, this is really a kind of a one-of-a-kind opportunity to participate in a facilitator training on the ground. And so we're really looking forward to more people coming and to enjoy this great experience and opportunity over this weekend.
Awesome. So basically, we're going to be gathering on Friday evening, and you're providing some of your fantastic vegan meals. And as those of you who may not be aware of it, Mark is in the final stages of releasing the World Peace Diet, the World Peace Cookbook. Is that what it's called? World Peace Cookbook.
The World Peace Diet Cookbook.
World Peace Diet Cookbook. And so I guess, Mark, will there be some recipes from the cookbook in your sharing?
Yes, we will be serving some food for the Friday.
And the cooking class.
All throughout the weekend. And then on Sunday, as part of the training, there's going to be a hands-on cooking class. So we'll also be preparing some food in the cooking class for from the cookbook as well.
Great.
We'll have a lot of fun with that. And we'll also be talking about how to facilitate, our experience. It's always been that it works really great to have food as kind of the core centerpiece of when someone is having a group discussion of the World Peace Diet. Food is always really important, so we'll be talking about that, and I'll be talking about the experiences that we've been having now once or twice a month, every month for the last 10 years of presenting the World Peace Diet. So we're just going to have a lot of fun, and I think everybody will really enjoy it.
Yeah, and part of the weekend will take place at the yoga studio, and the other part will take place out at the sanctuary. So it'll be a nice little retreat setting at the sanctuary, and also get a feel for all the projects and things that are happening and going on at the studio too.
Great, right? Yeah, it's going to be at both places. I think Sunday at the sanctuary and Saturday at the yoga studio, and Mel and I are really looking forward to this. This is the only live training we're doing this year here in the United States, and we may do something at the very end of the year on the Big Island in Hawaii, but we're not sure about that. But this is really the main one. So if you know someone who would like to do a live training, definitely let them know. And if you yourself would like to do a live training, I mean, anyone, this is open. We've had quite a few people over the years who have done, two or three or four. In some cases, I think some people have done, four or five trainings, which we love. And we always get to become better and better friends, it's really a lot of fun. And like Mark says, and also an opportunity to engage in a variety of different exercises to help us develop our abilities to be effective advocates and to understand the issues more deeply and to deepen our connection also with other people and learn ways that we can build community wherever we're living. Because I think it's, we can always learn more. That's one of the things I've found. And, even though I feel like, I've been a vegan for 36 years, I feel like I'm just, in a way, scratching the surface. There's so much to learn in this, because it really embraces every dimension of our society, not just food, but the way we relate and the economy and the environment and spirituality and social structures and the various justice movements, and it's a constantly changing and learning and growing, and new things are emerging all the time. So it's a great way to just stay abreast of things too. So you can just go to we have a website, worldpeacediet.com, and if you just go to upcoming events and just click on September 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, you'll see links right there to the sign-up registration information for this event and for everything else we're doing this year. And I think it's really exciting. So thanks so much. And do you want to say anything else about either the session or that we're doing in September, or anything else about any of the other projects that you're working on? Because it's always great to hear what you folks in Cincinnati are up to.
Well, I'd like to say one more thing about the training itself. The overall theme for this training is going to be intersectionality, and we've just realized how important that is. There's so many different social justice movements that overlap, and sometimes they seem to be almost a conflict at times. Just recently, for instance, with the conversation of All Lives Matter and Black Lives Matter and things like that. So we're really going to focus on the nuances of those conversations that are going on in the world, and particularly to for people to understand that the vegan movement is, in its essence, a social justice movement, not to mention the fact that yoga in itself is a social justice movement that's been around for thousands and thousands of years. So we're really looking forward for all of us to gain a deeper understanding of how that all fits together, because I think it ultimately links into what Will you were talking about earlier with the plant peer summit. And it's interesting to me because particularly now that we're in this election cycle, and I think it's important for us to know, and we'll be talking about these kind of things, that when you read that list of names of the people that are going to be, including yourself, at Plant Peer Summit, those are truly the leaders on the planet right now. It's not the politicians. It's the people that are going to be speaking. Those are truly the real leaders of the planet right now. So it's really, really important for us to support that, to discuss that, to know that, and to participate and get involved. So you see so many people volunteer and are willing to travel to different cities for conventions and so forth and so on. And so I just really encourage people to see the value, for instance, of coming to this facilitator training, because this is where the real leadership is taking place on the planet, and it's allowing us to move forward in a healthy, powerful, collaborative, loving, gentle way.
Thank you. Yeah, that's very well said, Mark. I think you're right about that. You know, it's about helping us to co-create leaders of the movement, which I think the vegan movement, like you say, it's really, if we're going to have a future, this is it. And people who are actually bringing the vegan movement forward are the ones that are making a future possible for everyone. So anyone, if you're listening to this call, I think you already are one of the leaders also on the planet for a more just and sane and really a world that we have in the future. Then it's a great opportunity. Anytime we have a chance to get together and share ideas in a meaningful and serious way, in the sense that we're really working with the issues authentically ourselves, we're helping to lay the groundwork for potentially huge positive changes. And I think of some of the folks, not to in any way compare, but who have gone through the live trainings that we've done, like Kip Anderson, who created Cowspiracy, and Lorena Mukay, who I just was in touch with her today, and they're basically planning this year to reach 300,000 high school students with the vegan message. You know, she's got 50 trained people now who are going into high schools. And it's just so wonderful to see how something that starts out quite like just an individual's interest in wanting to do something, and how it can just continue to grow and expand and radiate and really create a massive actual shift in our society, probably much more than we realize. But I think everything we do contributes to this. So, yeah, if you have any interest in finding out more about this, of course, get in touch with Mark and Anna. You can find out more on our on the website and on Facebook page and all that kind of stuff. And like you say, you know, being in this election cycle, it's very obvious that it's not the politicians who are leading at all. I mean, it's really us, the people. And to have politicians that we really feel good about means we have to become, as Gandhi so well said, the change that we want to see. So this is great. This is really great, and we're looking forward to it. It's right around the corner, really, at this point. I mean, we're just talking about 3 weeks or so. So September 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. And so that's basically that. Anything else you want to say before we go on to something else?
I think that's good. We could always update on other projects in another time. I was really enthusiastic about the facilitator training.
Right. And Anna, I think it's good to point out that you have Gopis Yoga, which gives yoga teacher trainings. If anyone who wants to be a yoga teacher and certified in a completely vegan training program, which is empowering not just on the level of yoga as a physical discipline, but yoga as a spiritual and emotional and ethical discipline as well, and a way of liberating ourselves. It's a wonderful training and wonderful context that you've developed for helping to transform people's lives and deepen their understanding of the interconnectedness of spirituality and daily life. So that's something else that's an aspect of this whole training we're going to be doing in early September. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Paul.
Yeah, well, we'll just look forward to seeing everyone that's able to in September, and we'll have a great time.
Great. If anyone has a question, press star 6 is one person. I think that has her hand raised here. I'm going to go ahead and unmute this phone. This is area code 773-318-3830. Hello, you're there. I just unmuted. Do you have a question or a comment?
Yes, Will?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I'm curious. I didn't hear. I don't have a real good connection today. This is Mary Lou from Chicago. Who are you talking about? Was that the Ethical Choices Program for the high school kids? I didn't hear who was offering that.
Okay, so, that is Lorena Muke, and she is, you can go to Ethical Choices Program.
Okay,
Google
that. I didn't hear. Is that who you were referring to?
Yes, that's who I was referring to, yes.
Okay, all right. I'm aware of them. I didn't know if that was the program or if it was somebody else. That's all I have.
Right.
Thank you.
Great. Okay, very good. All right. Well, I want to really thank Mark and Anna for being on the phone. We have another hand raised. This is Dorothy, I can tell. Hi, Dorothy. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Will. It's nice to be on the phone.
Hey, Dorothy. Good to have you.
I do have a question, and this thought came to me. When Jesus multiplied the fishes, and the thought came to me, that would be a question that possibly someone would ask me. Well, didn't Jesus give people fish to eat? You know, and so I was wondering how you would address that concern.
Right. Yeah, that's a question that comes up quite often. I hear that, you know, people say, well, wait a minute. I mean, Jesus himself, you know, ate fish, because it says in the Bible that he multiplied the fishes to give to everybody. And so I think you got to kind of, see what kind of person you're talking to. If it's a normal person who just believes the Bible, whatever it says, no matter what, then I always emphasize the importance, if possible, in these kind of situations, of not arguing with a person so that they feel defensive or that you're making light of their comment. And so I would typically, in my case, would initially agree with them in the sense that I would say, yeah, I know, I remember that. I read that for years. I went to Sunday school and I read about Jesus and the loaves and the fishes, and it sure does seem to, make sense that that's what happened. And then I think it's always good to see if you can inject some perspective on it, that But basically, today we have a situation where, you know, but I mean, but use I statements. I realize now that we have a situation where we're killing so many fish to feed the people that the ocean fisheries are collapsing, or have already collapsed in many cases, and that we just are causing not only environmental devastation, but enormous suffering, because today these fishes concentrate heavy metals and PCBs that are product of our society. And it's well known that these animals, you know, today, well known that they suffer tremendously. And I just think that today, perhaps Jesus would be less likely to want to feed everybody fishes because of the suffering involved and the fact that we have so many people who don't have anything to eat, and that we can feed everyone, really, on a fraction of the land on a plant-based diet. And I've discovered myself that it actually takes 1/15 of the amount of land to feed someone eating a plant-based diet. So we can feed 15 people eating a plant-based diet, or just one person eating a typical Western diet. And the oceans at this point have collapsed. You know, 2/3 of the fish we're eating are factory farmed, where these poor fish are stuck in these stinking cages where they can't even swim around hardly, and they're swimming in their own excrement. It's horribly cruel and violent. I mean, I just don't think myself that Jesus would ever be, you know, want to buy factory farmed fish or buy fish that's loaded with mercury and PCBs and dioxins and nuclear radiation, and where there's so much suffering to the animals nowadays. I mean, it's just really, is that something that my religion would want me to support? If I understand Jesus correctly, he's really encouraging us to have a sense of caring and kindness. He talks about how he longs to gather all the people under him with love, the way a mother hen does her chicks. You know, that feeling of seeing animals as an example of love and kindness and caring. And today we can make these choices. But I would just say, you know, I've just been keep using I statements, and I've realized that today I can actually make a choice to reduce the amount of suffering that I'm causing to other living beings, which to me seems to be right in alignment and in accord with what Jesus was actually saying. And if you feel that the person might be somewhat open-minded about this kind of thing, you could also say, you know, that I was, I've been doing quite a bit of research into this because I'm interested in knowing really what maybe the original scriptures actually said. And there are some scholars who say that the original words that were used in the ancient texts were more like fruits rather than fishes, that actually it was bread and fruits that were multiplied so much to feed everyone, which actually makes a lot more sense when you think about it, because on a hot day with a bunch of people, I mean, the fish is going to be probably not going to be all that easily. I mean, it's not that practical in a sense. I mean, it goes bad very quickly and starts stinking. Whereas if you have fruits and bread, those just really go together much more easily. And so that there's not really 100% sure what was actually divided. It was it's well known that there were people who wanted to make sure that the message in the Bible was, you know, met official approval along the way, so things were corrected in a certain way. And so there's quite a few books that have actually been written that prove very convincingly that Jesus and the original disciples did not eat any meat or fish. And it's written by people who knew the original Christians. For example, that James, the brother of Jesus, would not even wear wool. He only wore linen because he didn't want to cause any suffering to sheep and have them, you know, be owned as objects. That he was in the Essenes and which were a group of Jewish people in communities where they lived very simply, where they did not eat any meat or drink any wine or own any slaves or go to war. They refused to do any of those things. And this is very much in alignment, actually, with what Jesus was always standing for. He was a radical peace activist in many ways and told people not to make oaths and not to wear, to drink alcohol or eat meat or to own slaves or to engage in violence or war and conflict and to turn the other cheek and so forth. And this kind of very powerful message actually was something that all the original Christians lived. And there are books that I talked about in the World Peace Diet, like The Lost Religion of Jesus by Keith Akers, and another book called The Origins of Christianity, which is highly recommended. Also, if anybody wants to kind of explore this more deeply, and it's well known, really, that the people who wrote about the original Christians, the earliest followers of Jesus and the Desert Fathers, that none of them ate meat. That was basically well understood. It was a big controversy. There were people who wanted Christianity to spread and become more popular, and they wanted to take away that prohibition against meat eating. But that was very much opposed by the Jesus and then by his designated spokesperson after that, who was James, his brother. And the earliest Christians who were called Ebionites. So, you know, if you think someone might be open to that, you can get into that whole kind of discussion. But I think just, you know, emphasizing that what I've discovered is I don't have to cause suffering to animals. And it's well understood today that fish feel pain just as much as dogs and cats do. And I think Jesus was, one of his main teachings was to be kind and loving. And so for me, just being a vegan has been such a great gift, and I not only do I feel healthier, I feel better in my heart because I'm not causing suffering to other beings. And then just let it go. You know, you can just have a short answer just like that, and just let it go and say, you know, that's what I'm so happy that I've discovered this, and it's great. You know, just say just a brief answer, and don't try to change the person or argue with them or be right or any of that. Just say how happy you are that you've realized that. The essence of Christianity is kindness for others, and now that I understand that fish feel pain just as much as dogs and cats and people, they have the same basic systems, that I don't have to cause that pain, and I'm healthier for it too, and happier, and my heart feels lighter, and I'm just so delighted. And I realized the only reason I was eating fish was because I was just following orders that actually were not in my best interest. And it's well understood today that fish concentrate toxins and are acidifying and inflammatory. And so, gosh, you know, it's so great not to eat them be happy and leave it at that. You know, I think that kind of a thing, you know, where you're not trying to change the person, but just expressing the happiness that you feel in your heart for the gift that you've been given to be able to question this and to really live the spirit of Jesus' teachings, which is love and caring for others, you know, for other neighbors, you know, all beings are our neighbors, really. I think that's well understood, that Jesus always included animals very much. He talked about the birds of the air, and he talked about the other creatures, and preaching the gospel to all creatures. He didn't say to all people. So I think, you know, all those kinds of things can just help people to understand this. And the other thing is, just this great book that you may want to read perhaps at some point if you have a chance. I just read it. I actually just finished it a couple of days ago. And it's called Every Living Thing. The title is Every Living Thing. It's basically put up by the Humane Society, but it's a book that gives the official position of all the major religions in the United States. towards animals. And, you know, so it's got the Church of God, you know, or whatever it is, the Assembly of God, the Baptists, the Methodists, the Episcopalians, the Catholics, the Presbyterians, the United Church of Christ, you know, all these different, you know, main, probably 15 of the main, the biggest ones that'll have, you know, 5 to maybe 80 million people, whatever they are, the big ones. And really reading them, it's remarkable how literally all of them make a big deal about the fact that animals are God's creatures. They are deserving of respect. We should never harm them unnecessarily. That we have failed miserably in our treatment of animals. That God is not happy with what we're doing. We should really work harder to show respect to not just to the earth, but to all of the creatures on this earth. I mean, if you read what they're saying, this is what they're teaching, this is what their official positions are, then what the heck are they doing when it's well understood that it's unnecessary to eat animals and to eat fish, you know, then, and it's obvious that it's hooking them and pulling them out of the water and strangling them and killing them and beating them is completely unnecessary. Then, you know, then there it is. I mean, just say, you know, again, don't judge them, but just say, I'm so glad I realized, you know, when I actually read the official position of my church, the Episcopalian church, whatever it is, and how they say that all of us as members of this faith, it's our responsibility to just maximize kindness and compassion to animals, because that's part of the fundamental teachings of Jesus as we understand them. And that, gosh, I'm so glad that, you know, that I've realized it's completely unnecessary to eat them, and it's certainly against the teachings of our religion. because that's it. You know, it's really true. I mean, you can read, if you want to get the hard, you know, the actually hard statements, you can get the book, that I just mentioned.
Yes.
Every Living Thing, and you can actually read that. So that's what I would say, Dorothy. Thanks so much. Do you have any other questions or anything? Or?
No, I just want to say, and what I have been experiencing in the past couple weeks is exactly what you said, this happiness in my heart, even when there are challenges. I went to visit my sister's grave, and my parents are there, and I'm crying. And out of nowhere, what came out of my mouth was, and I want you to know I'm so happy, you know, at their grave, and I'm laughing. I'm saying, I'm so happy, even though this is going on. Oh, I'm so happy, because I've noticed there's been a, like something has changed within me now that I am vegan. There's a inner joy that is springing up, so people feel my joy, and I feel it no matter what, no matter what. What challenge there is to face, this oneness is so beautiful, and it's what is true. So thank you so much. It was our pleasure to have you on the Cape. You really have changed lives, so we're most grateful.
Great. Thank you so much, Dorothy. Thanks for joining us and for telling us about your joy. That's beautiful, so beautiful and precious. Thank you. We'll talk later. Thanks. Yeah, so I just love what Dorothy just said, and I think really that's an important point. There was just yesterday on Facebook, there's a woman, I don't know if you know, her name is Erin. What's her name? Erin. Anyway, she's famous on Facebook, actually on YouTube. She's got YouTube videos that, you know, have got hundreds of thousands of views, and she's a vegan. She has great, she did the one, Dairy is Scary. That's a great YouTube. I mean, if you have a chance to watch Dairy is Scary on YouTube, I highly recommend it. It's great. And, anyway, she's, her name is Erin Janus, J-A-N-U-S. She actually lives in Toronto, I think. But she just posted something yesterday that I thought was very interesting. She and I have been in touch. She's reading the World Peace Diet now, and we're potentially working together on a few projects. And but she posted this beautiful, very short video you've seen and probably have some of a mother skunk and three little skunks. I mean, it is just absolutely heartwarmingly beautiful. I mean, this mother skunk and these three little skunks, and they're all just together, and they're walking down the street together, just kind of, you know, swirling along in black and white mass of light, and just kind of going along, and they come right up to this guy, and he's got his video camera, probably, and right up to his foot, you know, and looking at his bicycle, he's on his bike, I guess, and they start making all these little squeaking and squealing sounds, little ones do, and then she goes trundling off, and they all go right along beside her, and right, you know, all like one little unit, and then she writes, you know, since I've become a vegan, I've discovered a vegan superpower. Something like that. But the basic point she makes, and I've actually written about this a little bit, is this: it's not every vegan, I don't think, realizes this. But I think it's possible that I realize that when we go vegan, and we do it, and it's more than just changing our behavior in sort of a rational way, that when we actually imbibe the spirit of veganism, it opens an inner doorway to really huge miracles, in a sense, or magical. I don't want to say magical in the strange sense, but to the re-enchantment of the world. You know, that we begin with veganism to live our life so differently from the way everyone else is living their lives. We become almost like an inhabitant of a different reality. We have emotions that people who are eating animal foods can never even imagine, right? Both positive and negative. I mean, I think it's probably, you know, the emotions of sadness and anger, for example, that vegans feel when they see people eating meat and dairy. People who eat meat and dairy just can't even imagine these feelings, right? I mean, these are feelings that we have that they can't imagine. But also the feelings of joy, the feelings of the preciousness of life. As vegans, we have access to other emotions, other states of being, and other feeling states that are absolutely unavailable to anyone eating animal foods. They're just not available. It's impossible. You cannot have those feelings. And so once you go vegan, we have the potential to enter a whole other world. And I don't think there's any limit to the amazingly beautiful possibilities that can unfold for us as vegans in terms of our capacity to see life in animals, in plants, in the sky, where the fundamental training in our society is to see objects that are more or less dead or that are just biologically living in some kind of shallow three-dimensional way. As vegans, we can enter into a heartfelt appreciation for the magic of existence, and it just opens, like Dorothy just said, a feeling of joy that doesn't need any reasons in the outer world. We're just happy because we're alive and we're part of this unfoldment of life here. And we can see, you know, seeing a little bird just bring tears to my eyes. I see this bird is my good friend. You know, here she is. She's doing her best and she's going along and, you know, and they're so amazingly capable. I mean, animals, I just love the mastery that animals have in their environment, how they are able to just move and interact and feed themselves and propagate. But more than that, they're celebrating their lives and they're communicating and they're living and they're loving their lives, and how shallow and tragic it is that we are blind to that. We don't even see it. We think that that these animals are better off, you know, in prisons because they get fed. You know, I mean, that's That's the ultimate slave state of mind that has pervaded our society, that we allow, we've disconnected so deeply and profoundly from our true nature that we tolerate the kind of misery that we put animals into. I mean, I really don't want to tolerate it. But on the other hand, you know, here it is. It is happening, but we, I think as vegans, we can, by seeing the beauty and the hidden dimension of life, in a sense, I think we can begin to open up doorways to bring a new future into possibility. And we'll be inspired with ideas to help that happen. The ideas may be, like I was just saying, like Lorena Muck, for example, or from Anna Ferguson, you know, to create a yoga studio, or for her to create a whole movement of people to go in and, like, this little army of people going into high schools and bringing the vegan message, and other people who are creating writings and blogs and videos and music and cooking classes and sharing, you know, like Lily does, the reading the World Peace Diet and sharing ideas. And there's so many ways, there's just an endless number of ways that we can allow this to radiate from our lives and bless others. And I think that's the great good fortune that we have in this movement, that because it goes right to the root of our dilemmas, which is not just our mistreatment of animals for food, but the mentality that dualistically separates us from nature and makes us feel like we're outsiders, and we have to struggle and we have to dominate and exploit and oppress each other and animals and nature in order to survive. I mean, what a miserable delusion that is, and that animal agriculture forces that into us because it's about domination, exploitation on a massive scale, and eating it, feeding it to our children, and then just normalizing the whole thing as if it's the way it is. And it's enormously tragic, and yet once we get out of it, we can be so grateful that we're out of it. And even, it doesn't mean we don't have any problems that we're not trying to solve and help, but we do have that basic foundation. So I think it's really important for us in the vegan movement as vegans to understand this and to celebrate and explore the possibilities that we have to liberate ourselves from the mentality of materialism, of dualism, of herderism, of human superiority, of the separate, the fundamentally separate self idea, that I'm this fundamentally separate self that has to compete and struggle, and realize that we're expressions of life that are actually far greater than the little self we think we are. This little mask, this little character that we're playing, and that we are life itself manifesting. And that, I think, is why we see that veganism kind of opens up a doorway, because when we stop eating animal foods and we are open to this other dimension, like Mark said too, it leads to helping us to heal all the social justice movements, like racism and sexism and all these human abuse kinds of things. They really come from the same basic wound of seeing beings as things and eating them, you know, and excluding them from the sphere of our kindness and compassion. So going vegan, in a sense, is like the master key that unlocked every lock once we understand it to be that. And not that we're any better than anybody, but just that there's this mentality of radical inclusion and kindness for all forms of life, and then making an effort to bring all of our thoughts and feelings into alignment with that, it releases us from slavery and misery and tension and stress and frustration, and opens the doorway to creativity and happiness and liberation, even within the daily potential, you know, the daily struggles, in a sense, that we have, the daily obligations and so forth. And I think supporting each other in that is fantastic also, and creating communities that help to do that. So I want to thank all of you. I'm so grateful for your presence here and for what you're doing in the world and for helping to create more and more variety of contexts where we can experience this in some way and share these ideas with each other. And so thank you, Dorothy. And I was also got a voice message actually from, I'm going to see if she's still here, from Lily. She wanted to talk a little bit about this little feline being. I think it would be nice to hear from Lily. So I'm going to unmute Lily. And remember, everybody, if you'd like to ask any question at all about the subject of vegan living and thriving as vegans in a not-yet-vegan world and being more effective in our advocacy and understanding what this is all about, with veganism in our society and how they interact, press star 6, and we'll be happy to talk to you. Of course, we only have about another 20 minutes. So, but Lily, I'd love to hear a little bit from you. Are you there?
I think I am. Hello, Will?
Hi, yes, we all hear you, I'm sure. Great.
Oh, I want to introduce Princess Madeline Tuttle Pussy Willow to the group. And
okay.
She is, as you know, my cats have all been vegan now since I went vegan, and I've been using Evolution Pet Food. It's a company that's been out for almost 28 years. The founder of it comes to my study group, which is World Peace Diet Sunday. I do want to invite Dorothy from Cape Cod to come to that. I think she'd really enjoy it. And Eric is very knowledgeable about pet food, obviously. I've got this little Princess Madeline Tuttle Pussy Willow. I'm holding her. Princess is her title. Madeline is her first name. Tuttle is her second name. And Pussy Willow is her last name. And she is like the most glorious little girl. She was only 1 week old when I got her. Now she is 13 weeks old. I talked to Eric about her, Evolution Pet Food. I said, I'm concerned because she's a baby, a real little baby. She was found in the forest. And obviously, her mother was foraging or something in the forest, but she was left alone, and she's now my sweet vegan Pussy Willow, who has been vegan not directly from birth, but for the last 7 weeks now. I gave her a little goat milk to get her started, and I had to bottle feed her. She was so tiny. I gave her a little organic goat milk to start her off, and then have switched her to Evolution Pet Food, which is the high-protein, no-grain pet food. And it is absolutely, I've never seen such a calm, although extremely energetic when she feels like it, kitten in my life. She's soft, like velvet. There's a lot of good stuff in his pet food. And, you know, Will, I've been vegan now almost 10 years because of your book. I hadn't planned to become vegan, and as soon as I read your book, I said, no way in the name of my pets am I going to do harm to all these other beautiful animals that they would never eat anyway. If they were out in the wild, that cat would never eat a hog or a cow or a sheep or anything. So I you know, this whole lamb diet thing that they give to dogs and cats, I mean, it's so awful. It's so terrible. And this little girl, I mean, I wish I were on a video right now. I wish you could see this beautiful kitten growing at leaps and bounds with Evolution, the high-protein, maximum-life pet food. And this is a commercial, but I don't work for the company. This is a commercial for the other animals that people destroy because they have pets. And I'm sorry to say that many of these people are vegan. And they call themselves vegan, and they still buy pet food for their animals, and they say, well, I can't tell them what to eat. I'm going to eat vegan, but they don't have a choice. They have to eat other animals, and I want to let everyone know Evolution Pet Food isn't the only one out there. I just happen to have been using it now for almost 10 years. I have 2 dogs, 4 cats, and now this little kitten who is Madeline. I love her so much. And she has eyes like your wife. I mean, she has eyes like our own Madeline. She's so good. She's so good-natured. I have taken some photographs. I wish that I had joined the 21st century and was online and was doing all this stuff, but you know where I live. You've been here, Will.
Right.
So, anyway, I just wanted to put that out there, and I also want to put in a plug for our 2 weeks ago, Will came and was our guest on World Peace Diet Sunday, and I listened to it. I have actually been using that as a daily meditation, because what I did is I had Will just speak for an hour on whatever he wanted to talk about, and it's one of the most beautiful talks I've ever heard, and people are calling me from all over the place, and it's a great way to be an activist, because even people who aren't vegan, I had one woman call me and say, even if you're not a vegan, even if you don't want to be a vegan, listening to this can change your life. And so I'm using that. I did tape that particular session with Will on there, and it's a beautiful, beautiful, I don't know if you've heard it, Will, because I know that, you know, you didn't have time to listen to it, just the most beautiful session. So I want to put a plug for that and just give the number out so that people can use it as a
yes.
tool of activism. This is the way I am an activist. I do it by just telling people that there is another way. And also I'm going to the stores now, and I want to bring Madeline with me everywhere I go and say, look, she's raised on vegan pet food. I want this stuff in the stores. I want people to be able to get it. I mean, activism, as you said, can be done in many different ways, and this is my way. I'm doing it through my own personal life and commitment for the rest of my life to spreading the message that this cannot continue the way we're living here on this planet.
Right. Wow, that's so fantastic. Thank you for that living example of the vegan little vegan kitty who's just thriving on evolution vegan cat food. That's amazing. That's beautiful. So, I mean, I'm not surprised. I'm delighted that you were able to rescue her.
Beautiful. And he is doing wonderful work, this man, Eric Wiseman, because
sure.
he's up against the whole industry, and he is an activist yeah. in his own right. And he,
yeah.
I am absolutely... It's wonderful. It's an honor. He comes every week to World Peace Diet
right.
Sunday. People ask him questions about pet food, and
mm-hmm.
he's very knowledgeable and about, you know, how to, he's kind of like a vet almost. He's not a vet. I think he's a chiropractor, something like that. But, I wish you could all see this Madeline. I'm so crazy about her. And the fact that she's vegan from early childhood, you know.
Right.
A beautiful thing to witness, and how happy she is eating that stuff. She loves it. She can't wait.
Uh-huh. Great. All right. Well, maybe at some point you can take a photograph and send it to Sharon, and then we can.
Yes,
can
she's
going to
put
here.
It on our. We're
we'll
on.
Figure
Facebook.
It out. Yeah, we'll
World
get a picture
Peace Diet
of Madeline
Sunday
and,
is on Facebook. And also,
mm-hmm.
your the number is on your website of how to get to World Peace Diet Sunday. And also, it's just one digit off. It's, you know, it's 3900, and it's 3903 to listen to that marvelous tape. It's just, it's fantastic. And would you like me to give that number out in case anyone would like to? You know, it's just like having you in the room, and it's so beautiful, beautiful recording.
Yeah, go ahead if you have it.
I'll
handy.
Give it up. I'll give it up, and then I'll mute myself. The number for World Peace Diet Sunday for the beautiful recording is 712-432-3903. I'll repeat it, and then I'll give you the access code. 712-432-3903. And then the access code is 568-364-POUND. 568-364-POUND. And it's exactly the same number to come live. And every Sunday at 8 o'clock Eastern, I've been doing this now. In October, it will be 3 years, every Sunday. That's my little bit of activism that I do.
So,
from the boonies.
But every Sunday, the World Peace Diet Sunday, where you're reading the World Peace Diet together as a group, and anyone, it's available to anyone, Is that 712-432-3903 or 3900?
00. 00.
Right. Yeah,
so it's the same number except it's 00, 3900 for the live one. And people like it because they, not everyone comes every week, but different people come. And people, we've had birthing of World Peace Diet facilitators out of this. People have said, gee, I had the World Peace Diet sitting on my bedstand, and I said, well, it's not even, not great reading to go, to read before you go to bed. But they've never read it, and then they're reading it, and I do the reading, and I do, I make some commentary, and then open it up for discussion. And, they said, you know, out of that, people have become World Peace Diet facilitators. You met one of them, Susan. So.
Right.
It's great. It's a good thing to do, and it's all I really can do with the lifestyle I live. But I'm doing we can all do the best we can. We can only do the best we can, wherever we are.
Exactly. Thanks so much, Lily.
Thank you. Thank you, Will.
All right. Thanks. Yeah. Bye bye. Thank you. Great. All right. So we don't have too much more time left here on our call. I just wanted there's a few things I wanted to go over. Here, please, if you have a chance, look over the resources for the World Peace Diet Circle for August 2016. It's on the link that I sent out to everybody on the worldpeacemastery.com/conference. And there's the video of my presentation recently in Boston made by Atara, which I think is very nice that she put that up. There's also a link to the audio recording that Lily just mentioned, if you want to just go and listen to it on your computer. There's a link there, it's Veganism, Spirituality, and Materialism. And I have not yet actually listened to it, but I remember it seemed to go very well when I was speaking it in a certain way. So feel free to avail yourselves of that. There's also several other interviews that I've been on lately, Speaking of Vegan. And don't forget the Marlene Nero. I don't know if I have that on here. I should have. I think I forgot. But anyway, there's a two-part interview with Marlene. And then also, which is on WCUW.org. And you can get to that up in the archives. And there's also videos of our workshop that we did on the World Peace Diet in Fitchburg that was put in local news, actually. We had the local news come, which was kind of fun. And then some other writings that I've done, the Vegan Birth and Circles of Compassion article. And then just to mention a few other things that are happening that are kind of interesting. There's this beautiful video of the Great Bell Chant in Buddhism to End All Suffering, which in many ways I think it's done by Thich Nhat Hanh. It's sort of the essence of ahimsa, which of course is the core teaching of veganism. There's an excellent article that I mentioned last month, but I have the link here, Why Super Meat Will Never Work. It talks about bovine fetal serum, which is a product of the dairy industry, a byproduct where the dairy cows, before they're killed, they're impregnated one last time, and then when they're 7 to 8 months or 9 months pregnant, ready to give birth, they send them to the slaughterhouse, and after they kill the mother, the baby is still alive inside, and so they extract with a long needle the fluid from their hearts of these baby unborn calves, and that's called bovine fetal serum, and it's used by the pharmaceutical industry for vaccines. Also, apparently, according to this biologist from the University of Oregon, the primary growth medium for a lot of these so-called vegan meats. You know, they're making vegan meats that are actual meat, animal meat kind of meat, that they use this stuff. So that's a very, to me, very controversial kind of twist to everything. You get to know, learn more about that. There's a nice interview with David Nybert on the entanglement of oppression. Another way to say entanglement of oppression would be the intersectionality of oppression or the interconnectedness of various forms of oppression These are different words, but pretty much the same thing, how they're interconnected. I think I like that word interconnected myself. But the idea is that these things are all connected. And there's some other, this one of an elephant literally weeping tears after she was liberated after 50 years of confinement in India. I mean, it's just, the elephants are such amazingly intelligent, deep-feeling beings. And I mean, I think all animals actually are, but to confine them and abuse them like this, I mean, it's one of the really most terrible things. There's also a great article about the Oroville community in Pondicherry, which is huge and very progressive and pretty much vegan. I mean, there's some dairy, but it's a totally plant-based with a little dairy, and so many people are living together. It's an intentional community. It's just great to see an example of a vegetarian community that I think could go vegan. And we're seeing more and more the vegan message spreading in India. There's also this thing here, I just want to draw this to your attention, that there's, you probably are aware of it, most of you, but there's now a new beautiful high-tech billboard. It's an electronic billboard in Times Square, right there, right above Good Morning America studios. Animals are equals, and it shows pictures of cows and pigs and chickens and humans, and talks about how they suffer the way we do, they celebrate the way we do, they love their babies the way we do, they feel pain the way we do, and it shows their faces of goats and people, and I mean, it's a really amazingly beautifully done by Joanna Lucas, who's the woman who also worked together with our Sarah Higgins, another person who's gone through our training and is creating this extremely successful billboard campaign in Ireland and England. It's coming to the United States as well, and she's worked with Joanna Lucas also to create the images for her billboard campaign for veganism. But anyway, check that out, because you know, it's being seen by hundreds of thousands of people live in Times Square every day. It's just, you know, 24 hours a day. It's up there. And we know Angel Flynn, who's with the General Will community, is part of the team that's created this and promoting it. She's a good friend of ours. So please spread the word about that to everybody you can think of. There's a great article about the damaging effects of livestock on public lands. There's still this kind of this delusion that somehow we can have livestock grazing and if that's good for the land, that somehow having cows trampling the earth and defecating on the earth is good for the land. And perhaps, you know, it's true if it was done, if it was natural, like it was with buffalo or with wild cows. But today, it's anything but natural. And the large numbers of them and the huge amount of land that it actually takes to feed them makes it completely inefficient for us to be eating their flesh or secretions as our way of getting food today when so many people are going hungry. But anyway, that's a good article. I love this one too, the importance of hospital farms. This is a doctor, he's an MD, and he's now a farmer. He's the first MD who's become a farmer, and he's saying that actually the best way to heal people is to grow them vegetables and feed them vegetables. And he's in New Jersey and he's doing this, and it's wildly successful apparently. It's just really a brilliant idea. He's the first doctor farmer, and his way of healing his patients is by growing them vegetables. And there's also this in Rochester, which is where we are here now in New York State. The Rochester River School, which is the first vegan public school in the United States. And we have that. And also, I should just say, we just had dinner with Ted and Carol Barnett. Ted Barnett is an MD, and he's been working with the CHIP program. I don't know if you've heard of the CHIP program. It's a complete health integration program, something like that. It's created by an MD in Los Angeles named Hans Diehl. And it's a whole program for how to eat healthy, for a healthy heart and for a healthy life. And so Ted has been really excited. I mean, we couldn't get him to stop talking about this thing, to tear myself away to come to this call. But he is now, he's been promoting veganism here in Rochester for years and years and years. He's probably 20, 25 years. But he's got three beautiful children and are now in college or graduated from college. They're all vegan. And his wife, they're vegan. They do a lot of vegan cooking classes. But now he's got 30 people on his team. And doctors are part of his team in Rochester. And he said this is scaling on a massive scale, that he's getting so many patients, and he just showed me in his garage, he's got 750 of these training programs. Each one of them costs like $200, and it's covered by insurance. So people who have heart disease, who have diabetes, who have cancer, who have obesity, who have, these different things, the insurance is paying if they get this program, and it's a workbook with a recipe book with a whole other book, and then it's a 4-month program they go through, and there's people that are trained, there's social workers, there's nurses and nutritionists and MDs that give this training. He kind of oversees the whole thing, and it's just rapidly expanding. Because it's so successful, people really heal on this program. I mean, their numbers, improve and everything. And so he said that they're making Rochester. We can make Rochester sort of the poster child for vegan health. And it looks like it's starting to happen because there's so many doctors are jumping on board. He's talking about how this oncologist just called him a couple of days ago and said, my gosh, I've been thinking about this for months, and now I realize it's true that we can actually heal cancer with moving people to a plant-based diet. And so there's all these, we're talking about the critical mass. Right? As we move more and more toward critical mass, and we have people coming at it from the health angle on a massive scale, and coming from the environmental angle on a massive scale, as we understand the devastating effects of animal agriculture for water and for soil erosion and for environmental devastation and species extinction and global climate destabilization. And then as we realize the absurd, ridiculous cruelty and violence and abuse of these animals, and the fact that we have people starving, which is causing food, shortage of refugees and war on so many levels. I mean, how can it not change very soon? I mean, it's got to. So anyway, it's great to see these examples here in Rochester. And then this is right here on CNN, plant protein is superior to animal protein for health. That's CNN. Sharon, the vegan organization in India, there's a whole nice article about them. They've asked us actually to come over to India to speak. At some point, hopefully, we'll be able to. Great video of Israeli activists using direct action. In Israel, they're just, they have hundreds of people showing up and shutting down slaughterhouses. I mean, they just show up and they just say, they link their arms together and they make a whole thing and they just stop it. Israel is incredible right now, what they're doing. It's wonderful to see. George Monbiot of The Guardian, he's most famous journalist there in The Guardian, is now basically a vegan, which is a great victory because he talks about how he just couldn't go on anymore, realizing how devastating, agriculture is. And so we're learning a lot. So those are some of the articles that I've chosen for this month. And it's great to see the positive changes that are happening in our world, and I just got today actually in the mail this wonderful article by a Humane Farming Association about Whole Foods and the half-truths at Whole Foods is the name of the article, but they really kind of puncture the balloon on the Whole Foods 5-step program of animal welfare, where they say raised right, tastes right, and this 5-step animal welfare certification program that they've been promoting. And basically what they're saying is that there's no requirement and no incentive, very little incentive for meat suppliers to move past step one. So even if they're only on step one, they say, well, they're part of our five-step program, and step one is basically nowhere. And step one is basically, you know, just totally abusing animals the way they normally would, but they can charge twice as much. For me, they were talking about how pork that's in their program, they sell at Whole Foods for $7.99, whereas it would normally sell, like, in Vons, the same product, for $4.99. So it's a huge markup. And they talk about these different steps, step one, step two, step three, how DXC, Direct Action Everywhere, went in and looked at turkeys in a stage three supplier, and how these poor animals were living in filthy, crowded, noxious barns with huge amounts of ammonia. Lots of birds were dead. They were being trampled by the other birds. They were in their own feces. They had open wounds and bruises. You know, 7% of the birds were dying every week. I mean, this is stage three on the stage. I mean, this is a total joke. You know, so, you know, people have to understand that this so-called, these things of Whole Foods, how they're promoting, raised right, case right, and five-step certification program of animal welfare certified program and all that, that they do very few, they only do inspections once every 15 months, and they're pre-announced. The inspections are pre-announced. And people don't, even if they fail the inspections, they stay in the program. So it's basically, they're working with industries to basically whitewash the whole thing, to make more money and to, it's quite disturbing, actually. But I'm not surprised, actually. But anyway, it's important, I think, in all of this, there's so much to sort of keep abreast of, but as we learn more and realize that there's one way home, and that is kindness and compassion for all beings, it's just like Jesus said, just like all the great teachers have told us, that we have within our own consciousness all the keys to the kingdom of the infinite spirit of kindness and compassion and joy and freedom for ourselves and for everyone. And it's just a matter of doing our best to unfold those within ourselves and then share them with each other. So I'm going to stop here. It's been a wonderful call. I really appreciate everyone who participated. Thank you so much, Mark and Anna. Please join us if you can in early September in Cincinnati, or if you know people who might be interested, let them know. Also, have a look at our calendar. We're going to be speaking in lots of places in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, Wisconsin, Missouri, then Colorado, Utah, Nevada, and back in California over the next 2 months, and before we head to Asia. And so it's great to, if you know folks in those cities or whatever, let them know, and we'll keep the cross-pollination of our ideas continuing. Thank you all for the efforts that you're making. I wish we could hear from all of you, but I know this is a precious time that we have every third Thursday, and I look forward to it the whole month. So looking forward to next time we get to share together some time. And remember, if you have any questions at all, you want to bring them up, it's a good time to do so. September 15th will be the third Thursday of September. We will be in Michigan at that point between Lansing and Saugatuck. And so we'll give a call. We'll be joining again here at that time. So in the meantime, we can say together the Circle of Compassion, which is circleofcompassion.org, the Worldwide Prayer Circle for Animals that Madeline and I and Judy Carmen, our wonderful colleague, have co-created and together, and we're participating. The prayer that we say together, which is, compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Say it again. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. We give thanks, knowing this is so, and we conclude now with a piece of music. Let's have a calf song. These are the little baby calves that very often get killed as soon as they're born on modern dairies. Probably the most pathetic victims of the system. Calves are such beautiful, loving, trusting little creatures, and how they're so horribly abused. hold them in our hearts, hold all beings in our hearts. We love you, we appreciate you, and thanks again for joining us. Look forward to the next time. Much love to you all from Madeline and me, and we'll talk to you next time.